For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new podcasts, articles, news and notes, every bit of baseball content that we share out. You guys can find it over there. If you're not somebody who uses social media, SportsEthos.com is the place for you guys to be checking out. I'm not sure if you can notice, but from the intro, I am a little bit under the weather. I mentioned a couple days ago that I thought something was coming on. Yesterday seemed okay. Today, not so much. So we're going to do a little bit of a shorter show today. If you guys are looking for a longer episode to check out, yesterday I was joined by Gray Albright, the founder of Razzball, to talk about some early season surprises. Mostly we talked about some bad stuff, injuries and all that. But we also talked about some positives, some potential breakouts as well. Of course, we touched on my favorite player these days, Garrett Crochet. So make sure you guys are checking that one out. We went about an hour and 10 minutes. That will be the long show of the week, especially the way my throat is going. Today, we're going to talk about some news and notes, and then we're going to break down Tuesday's quick hits for you guys. And then we're going to get out of here. This is going to be a very quick one, just trying to keep the throat rested. When you do a show every day, you can't afford to be going down for too long of a stretch. But let's start off with the big news. Jackson Holliday is a big leaguer today for the first time in his career. I was going to say he's finally here, but it's kind of hard to say that for a 20-year-old, and we're only 2 weeks into the really first time he could have been. I guess they could have called him up last year, but it wasn't realistic to expect that. He is officially a big leaguer. He is in the lineup tonight at Fenway Park making his big league debut. It's fantastic to see. I've been a big fan of Jackson Holliday. I drafted him 4 times this offseason, and at first I was kind of upset because he didn't make the team, but it's April 10th. It's really not anything to worry about in the grand scheme of things. He's only missed 10 games. In those 10 games, he's been down in the minors. I mean, that entire Norfolk team, the AAA affiliate for the Orioles, it's just ridiculous what they're doing. They're far better than the Rockies, than I think the Athletics, the White Sox. It's kind of ridiculous how good they are. So he's been like their fifth best hitter to start the season, but he has been 180 WRC plus for the first 10 games. He's hit a couple of homers. He has 18 runs already in 10 games. 18 runs. He has a 21% walk rate and a 14% strikeout rate. Small sample size, but the kid is absolutely ridiculous. My only concern, really, is how he's going to be used. And Baltimore has shown us the last couple of seasons that they'll call up a top prospect. Just ask Colton Cowser how this feels. Get called up, and you ride the pine. So I don't know that that's going to be the plan with Holliday. I think he's going to play more regularly than Cowser, but we should kind of be on our toes a little bit to see, like, if Jackson Holliday's not in the lineup tomorrow, people are going to be, like, losing their shit and thinking it's, like, here we go again. It probably isn't going to be as extreme as we've seen with him and what we saw a bit with Westberg last year as well. Just guys getting called up and not playing. It's a nature of their situation of just being too crowded. We've been talking about this for 2 years now, it feels like, that they need to trade some of these prospects because they're not all going to pan out, and you can turn them into contributing big leaguers, specifically probably starting pitchers, and you can clear some space for guys like Jackson Holliday, Colton Cowser, etc. So he has a spot. They say he's going to be the second baseman. He's batting ninth in the lineup today. But I think that we kind of need to keep our expectations a little bit in check. Jackson Holliday is beyond capable of winning Rookie of the Year and hitting like 17 homers, batting .280, stealing 20 bases, just looking like an absolute stud. But the other side of that coin is maybe the Orioles only play him, you know, 75% of the time, and he's always batting ninth. And then it becomes like, what are we doing here? I drafted Jackson Holliday thinking he was going to be a starting shortstop for me, and you know, fart noises, essentially. That's the potential outcome here. I don't expect that to happen, but again, this is a year of kind of the unpredictable. I don't really know how to even do a show anymore and try and make predictions for podcasts, for tweets, for articles to try and talk about what I expect to happen, because I have no idea at this point. The way the first 2 weeks have gone, I wouldn't be surprised if Jamie Moyer, John Lackey, Bartolo Colon are, you know, winning the Cy Young or the three finalists at this point. But Jackson Holliday, it does worry me a little bit the way that the Orioles use top prospects. If he was on any other team, I wouldn't really care. But, you know, the fact that they're kind of crowded, the fact that he's batting ninth, and there's no real path that I see directly to putting him at the top of the order. Could it happen? Yeah. But I don't know that it's very likely we're going to see him displacing the guys that they have in the top two of the batting order, which is probably where it would make sense. Gunnar Henderson, Nathalie Rutschman, they're not going anywhere. He's not going to bat third, probably, I don't think. Santander, I think, makes sense there. Ryan O'Hearn as a four guy, I don't know if that's something that's going to stick long-term necessarily, but you got Mountcastle, you got Mullins, you got Couser. Jackson Holliday might be stuck at the bottom of the order for a while, and that might end up taking away from some of the fantasy goodness we get from him in year one. I think, you know, over the next few years, we can expect him to turn into a superstar. But if it doesn't happen this year, I would, you know, again, we don't know what's going to happen, but it might be more situational than Jackson Holliday's flopping. It might just be he's not actually getting regular at-bats. He's always batting ninth, and therefore the volume stats, the runs and RBIs are kind of limited. So it might not pan out. It might not be his fault, but I just want to keep people on their toes because a lot of people are very excited and put them in their lineups as they should be. But don't expect the second coming now, and don't tell yourself, like, oh, there's, you know, this year's Julio is on my team. Like, you're going to just disappoint yourself that way. Keep the expectations relatively low. I think he'll be a replacement-level player. If you have those expectations that he'll be about replacement level, maybe a bit better, then all he can do is profit on your team. If you're expecting a first-rounder, the odds are you're going to probably be pretty disappointed. Let's talk a bit about Max Scherzer here, because we got a positive update on him just a couple hours ago. The Associated Press posted something. A few places have posted now that Max Scherzer is well ahead of schedule in his recovery from his back injury, and he's expected to throw a live batting practice session next week. This is very intriguing. I mean, I was very surprised to see that Max Scherzer's only on 69% of Yahoo rosters, which is a big reason why I even mentioned this. If he was like 94, 95, then, I mean, okay. He's already rostered, then it doesn't even matter. People have kind of given up on Max Scherzer way too quickly, I think. Like, last year, it was a bad year for him. By his standards, it was an awful year. Worst year of his career, probably. There might have been one or two years, like, early on in Arizona that weren't, you know, great. But, you know, if you're looking at the last decade, 12, 14 years, this is the worst season that Max Scherzer has had. And it was a 3.77 ERA, a 1.12 whip. He had 13 wins, 174 strikeouts in 152 innings. There's so much goodness there. And yes, he's deteriorating. He's an older guy. Is he 40 yet? I think he's 39, maybe just not quite 40 yet. But he's an older guy, a lot of innings under the belt. So there's that factor to also put in there. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody now in any league of yours who's not looking for SP help. There's probably a couple people who've avoided the landmines, and they're sitting there with Corbin Burns and a couple other guys and feeling real good about themselves. I think most of us are in the situation where if we can get an SP back, somebody who's a multiple-time Cy Young winner, pitching for the reigning World Series champions, a title they won essentially without his contributions, I might add, I think that he makes a very interesting pickup if he's still sitting there, especially for IL leagues. And most Yahoo leagues are IL leagues. Most of you guys, if you're playing on Yahoo, have four IL spots, three IL spots, depending on your league. It might be five or seven or ten or whatever it is. Even if it's just one, you could make the case that Max Scherzer deserves to have that one IL spot in your league. Whatever the situation is with your rosters, the fact that he's available in almost a third of leagues is troubling. It's upsetting at this point. Like, there are so many pitchers that we have lost. You have a potential Cy Young. I'm not even potential. He's a three-time Cy Young winner. I'm not saying he's going to do that again, but a potential, like, you know, 3.5 ERA guy, maybe even better. I shouldn't even cap him at that. Max Scherzer has had low two ERAs before. He's had strikeout rates in the upper 30s. Like, we shouldn't just say he's fully not that guy anymore. Maybe he's not going to be that guy over the course of a long season. But at this rate, he might only have to do it for about 4 months, 3.5 months. And if you can get 3.5 months of Max Scherzer onto your teams, I mean, you should be doing it. They're throwing around May as a potential timeline, which is crazy. Like, what I've seen for most of this is that he's targeting his birthday, which is the end of July. May would be insane. If you're only missing 7 weeks of Max Scherzer and then you're getting 20 weeks of Max Scherzer on your roster, I mean, it seems like it's elementary stuff, but the fact that he is so available would tell me that maybe it's not. People are just like, he's an old guy. What do we get at this point? There's nothing there. There's a lot there. So make sure you're still making sure he's not on your waiver wire. And it's not to say that he's going to just be a league winner. He's going to save your whole season if you lost Strider and Bieber and Framber Valdez and all these guys. But he should definitely be given the benefit of the doubt and should be, at the very least, added and put on the IL. And if it doesn't work out, then okay. Then it's not really going to cost you so much if you have to drop somebody who has just been on your IL. It's not like you're... It's not like he's expensive. It's not like maybe in Fab he'll go for a decent amount, but I can't imagine it'll even be that crazy a number. I feel like in most cases you are going to be able to find Max Scherzer for a pretty reasonable tag in Fab if he's even available, because there are leagues where he is probably already drafted and stashed, but I just don't see the risk at all in taking a chance on this maybe being one more good year of Scherzer if he's still out there. But really excited to see that he's ahead of his timeline. Let's talk about some of Tuesday's quick hits. I put these out on Twitter every single night. Well, I shouldn't say every single night. Pretty much every single night. I will miss the odd day, usually on a weekend if there's something going on. But lots of content over at JoeOrico99. That's my personal account. We post some stuff every single day for you. Last night, we talked, first off, about Tyler Glasnow. Best start that any pitcher has had this season so far. 7 shutout innings against the Twins. He made them look ridiculous all night, only allowed 3 hits. 14 strikeouts, did not walk a batter, and he had a 48% CSW. Just absurd. 21 whiffs on the day. For the season now, Tyler Glasnow is sitting at a 2.25 ERA. He has a 0.75 whip, and he has 29 strikeouts compared to just 7 walks over his first 4 starts. It's a breath of fresh air, to say the least, after everything that we have seen with pitching. Oh my God. Just to have one guy, especially the guy that was faded by everybody as the big injury risk, and you can't take Glasnow because he's going to be hurt after 40 innings and blah, blah, blah. He's one of the few remaining aces left, and it was great to see him just dominate yesterday. I have him only on one league, but this was amazing, amazing stuff to watch. I think it just kind of, for me, it's kind of going to sound stupid, but it almost just gave you faith in pitchers again after having a week where you're just like, this is so pointless. It's so depressing. It was truly depressing stuff. Every pitcher that you drafted was either hurt or it was getting blown up, and then you get the odd good start from, like, Paul Blackburn, and you're thinking, why do we do this? Why are we even doing this? But then Tyler Glasnow, a little bit of a beacon of light there just to remind us that it's a long season. It's a very, very long season. Not to get too ahead of ourselves, but this was one of the best starts that anybody's going to have all season long. Carlos Rodon got his first W of the year against the Marlins. If you just looked at the stat sheet, you were probably very happy. 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, no earned runs, 6 strikeouts, and no walks. A 24% CSW, literally half of what Glasnow was able to do in terms of his called strikes and his whiffs. So Carlos Rodon is somebody that I was very interested in. I was a strong proponent of drafting him, especially before the price increase, because it did get to a ridiculous point. He threw 97 in that bullpen session early in spring, and I lost my mind. Everybody kind of lost their minds, which was, in retrospect, probably a stupid thing to do. But, I mean, that's what we had. We had that he was throwing 97, and then he just wasn't able to do it. He just hasn't been able to get back up to that speed. I don't really know what the hell is going on with Rodon, but I would be selling him right now. I would be absolutely selling Carlos Rodon. The data below the hood is like god-awful. It's abhorrent. A 1.72 ERA is incredible. Incredible stuff through his first 15 innings. He has a 6.87 xERA, which I don't even really like to look at, but just like a crazy, crazy difference there. 4.57 FIP, which also I like okay, but I look at XFIP and I look at Sierra quite a bit. His XFIP is 5.01 and his Sierra was 4.83. If you're unfamiliar with these numbers, they're essentially ERA estimators. They take the characteristics that just the pitcher can control for the most part and excludes things like park factors and defense and things that the pitcher has, you know, no say in, and tries to just tell you how good the pitcher did himself. Rodon has been incredibly lucky. You also have to look at the fact that the strikeouts are drastically down year over year, down to 18.8% at this point. And let's just look over the last four seasons from 2021 through now. And again, small sample size this year. Last year wasn't the biggest sample size either, only 64 innings pitched. But that strikeout rate has gone from 34.6 to 33 to 22, now down to 18.8. The walk rate from 6.7 to 7.3 to 9.8 to 10.1. And then you're from a place where in 2021, he had a 28% strikeout minus walk rate. To start this year, it's below 9. It's 8.7%. He also has a 1.47 whip. He's stranded nearly 90% of base runners. Now, his BABIP is about normal, so there's nothing really to talk about there. He's allowing, you know, batting average on balls in play at about a regular rate. It's 298 right now. Maybe a little low, but nothing to write home about. But this is just a situation where he is going to fall apart, whether it's because he doesn't stay healthy or because the performances just catch up with him. You can't outrun these metrics forever. You cannot be striking out over the course of 15 innings, only 13 batters, when your kind of calling card is a strikeout pitcher. He had 237 strikeouts in 2022. That was a huge reason for his value. 2021, 185 of them in only 132 innings. Between those two seasons, he was, I believe, the leader in strikeouts. I don't have that pulled up right now, but he was like top three pitcher in baseball. He was just absolutely dominant because he struck out everybody in sight. Now he's striking out pitchers that are striking out batters at an average that is well below average. 22% is more in line with average. If you're getting below 20% in terms of your strikeouts, there's not a lot of hope for you, especially when you're walking more than 10% of batters. It's just a bad, bad situation for Rodon. If I'm you guys, I'm selling where you can. The leagues where I have him are not trading leagues, but he should be somebody that we do we do what we can to try and kick the tires on a trade, because a lot of people will just look at the ERA, which is very nice, and not look beyond it. He's somebody that you should be trying to deal right now. Shea Langeliers hit 3 home runs yesterday, and inevitably people went and added him because this is what we do, right? It's just, I don't understand it. I really don't. Like, this was like a month's worth of production out of Shea Langeliers. 3 home runs, maybe the 4 ribbies will be a little bit better over the course of a month, but that's probably all he's going to do for you for a very long time. He hits home runs. We've known this. Nothing changed yesterday in terms of how we know or how we evaluate the power that Shea Langeliers has. He just happened to have a really good day. It's a random great night. He plays in a terrible park, mostly AAA quality teammates. It's a hard pass for me outside of 2 catcher leagues. I don't think Shea Langeliers warrants an ad for anybody who is playing in a 1 catcher format. Nobody. Unless you're talking 20 team league, maybe at that point. But even then, 20 would be like, I'd have to think about it. He's really, there's nothing here, guys. There's really nothing there with Langeliers. The power's pretty good, but empty power from a catcher, it's not anything that you really need to be that interested in, especially with this team. James Outman has hit a home run each of the last couple of games. People were already dropping him. He fell to 72% on Yahoo, playing every day against righties. An incredible lineup. Like, you know that he has about 25 and 15 in him, roughly, something like that. What was it last year? 23 and 16. So, you know, that's right in line with what I think he should be able to do. He already did it last year, 23 and 16 with 86 runs scored, 70 RBI. It's a really good lineup. He's going to play pretty much every day. Why are people dropping him after a week? It makes no sense. And he showed you why you shouldn't have been dropping him with those couple of home runs. So if you're still seeing him on any waiver wires, go take a chance. Martin Perez is having another great season. 2022, he helped me on a couple teams on the way to, I won my home league partly because of it, actually. He was shockingly good. And I don't really think I ever expected to see it again, but he's been fantastic so far this year. Yesterday, 8 innings pitched. He allowed only 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts, did not walk a batter, and had a 36% CSW. He's only a year removed from being fantastic in 2022, and I think he should be added in most formats. If you can get that kind of production, especially in 15-teamers, 10s probably like a little bit unnecessary to have Martin Perez. 12s are, I think, probably a sweet spot, but 15s, like absolutely 12s, 15s. In that kind of range, not even really deeper leagues, 12 is pretty standard. But at this point, if he can maintain this production, which it might be like a 3.75, 3.85 ERA, but you'll take that in most cases, especially right now. You'll absolutely take it. I think he should be added pretty much everywhere. Likely a sit next start against the Phillies. It's still, and you know, they're struggling offensively, generally speaking, but they're still a scary bunch, not a team that I really want to put Perez against, but he still, I think, warrants an ad. Let's talk about Cole Reagans. Wasn't that his best versus the Astros? But even that wasn't terrible. He gave up 10 hits, allowed 3 earned runs, and walked a batter. Struck out 5, had a 29% CSW. He faced the top 3 offense in baseball, still had 16 whiffs without even being at his best. It was not the best Cole Reagans. I didn't see it live. I watched highlights after the fact, went through the data logs, and he was one of the more efficient pitchers on the day still, despite the fact that he gave up 10 hits. If this was a bad start, then we'll absolutely take it. And I have to probably at this point say that Nick Pollock was right. And I hate that I have to say that, and I'll have to live it down. But he was right. I was way too low on Cole Reagans. I bumped him up in the preseason and throughout the offseason. Like, I started, I have no shame in saying it, Cole Reagans was in the 40s for me. I just wasn't bought in. Bad team context. The command, especially at the end of the year, was awful. I wasn't interested. It was small sample size. I thought it was just, eh, you know, whatever. If you want to have him as your SP 4 or 5. But then he started to get drafted in the top 100 picks, and then you couldn't justify it anymore. So I have no Cole Reagans. I'm missing out on him this year, but I have to tip my cap to Nick Pollock because he was the first person that I saw talk about him in any positive light. The second that he was traded to Kansas, Nick was right on that. So shout out to Nick. He's great at what he does. Let's talk about Kyle Harrison. Looks like he's really coming into his own. He had 6 innings pitched yesterday, struck out 8, allowed 3 earned runs, 28% CSW. His last outing, he struggled a bit, but it did come against the Dodgers. Last night, he got back on form. Only on 75% of Yahoo rosters, I think Kyle Harrison is in the midst of a semi-quasi type of breakout, and he's not somebody you should be leaving on waiver wires. I really, really like what he does. Let's talk Colton Cowser now. He's been fantastic in the small sample size. It's just the way, again, I mentioned this earlier, the way that the Orioles use these young guys is infuriating. Cowser's in the lineup tonight. He was in the lineup last night. Previous 2 games he sat, and then he played the one before that. And then it's kind of been like every other game type of deal with Colton Cowser. And while I think the talent is there, I don't think the opportunity is going to be there for him in 10 and 12 team leagues for it to make it worth your while. If you're playing in 15 team leagues, then I think it works. You know, I think you can roster him in 15 team leagues, but 10s and 12s, which I know a lot of you guys play, you need that production now. You don't have a lot of bench spaces. You probably have 4 or 5 spots on your bench. Colton Cowser is somebody where I think he could be worth it, but I could also see a situation where he's a part-time player and he's great on a per-game basis, but never enough volume to make it worth the while in shallower formats. I feel like that's where we're headed with him and maybe with Jackson Holliday. I have more confidence in Holliday just because of the prospect pedigree being higher. They won't play as many games with him probably, but the Orioles are a smart team until they're not. Like, there are certain things they do that are, in my opinion, kind of stupid, and it comes down to playing time and roster construction. But in any event, I'll leave you guys there. I've gone longer than I expected to. I really am feeling like I'm falling under the weather, but it's okay. We'll be here again tomorrow. We'll figure something out, unless it's really, really bad. I'll be recording another show tomorrow, and we'll be talking on the In This League podcast with my good friends Bogman and the Welsh. I am the guest this week, so make sure you guys are checking that out wherever you get your podcast. 2 of the best guys in the business. It'll be a great time to talk with them, even if we're probably going to just talk about sad stuff. It'll be great to be on In This League again. It's been about a year. It's been a while. So make sure you guys are checking that one out. But make sure you're checking me out as well over on social media at JoelRico99. Ethos Fantasy BB is the baseball page. And of course, guys, if you can please leave a rating and review, I would really, really appreciate that. It does help the show to be seen more, helps us to grow. And if you're subscribing to the podcast, that also really helps all of us out. You get the shows right in your feed every day. Helps the downloads stay at a stable number. And everybody wins. But I will leave you guys there. I'm going to go make a cup of tea. But until tomorrow, guys, take care and have a great night.